This case is a good example of the importance of questioning family members. The son was a key historical figure in this case. Most of the important clues were in the history, so be sure to question anyone in the case scenario when you have an incomplete history, particularly family and friends. There are 5 critical actions in the management of this case. 1. Determination of anticholinergic poisoning. 2. Administration of activated charcoal. 3. Establishing an IV for venous access. 4. Placing the patient on a cardiac monitor if physostigmine is given. And 5. Admission. Anticholinergic poisoning frequently presents as a behavioral disorder in its early stages, but patients with behavioral disorders rarely present with abnormal vital signs. This patient presented with fever and tachycardia. When associated with a behavioral change, this combination should suggest the possibility of anticholinergic poisoning. However, I would fault this candidate for not considering the possibility of sepsis with this clinical presentation. Given that the patient was febrile and had an altered mental status, I think that a search for a source of infection was indicated, including blood and urine cultures, as well as a chest X-ray. In addition to fever and tachycardia, other signs of anticholinergic poisoning include the following: hot, dry skin with flushing, thirst, dysphagia, blurred vision, fixed dilated pupils, and sometimes hypertension. 2 of these findings were elicited just by asking about the patient's general appearance. The examiner reported a flushed facial appearance and said that the patient was asking for a drink of water, a subtle hint that the patient's thirst was significant. Since the patient's clinical presentation indicated that she was unlikely to provide any historical insight into her problem, the candidate turned immediately to the significant other, her son. The clue he was able to provide was that his mother was having trouble sleeping. More importantly, he was sent back to the house to look for evidence of poisoning or overdose. As the candidate began examining the patient, signs of atropinism began to surface: hot, dry skin, dilated pupils, and dry oral mucosa. A fine, scarlatine-like rash is sometimes found, too, in patients with anticholinergic excess, although this finding was absent in this case. The abdominal findings are also typical of atropinism. The abdomen is frequently distended with sparse or absent bowel sounds, at times simulating an obstruction. Bladder distension is also common. The point about the toxicology screen results not being available was made intentionally. Normally, these results do not come back for hours, sometimes days. However, during the exam, you may need these results if you are confronted with a complex clinical picture resulting from a multi-drug overdose. So when you order it, ask that it be run on a stat basis. The empty bottle of Benadryl brought this case into focus. Here was a lady who was having trouble sleeping, went to her doctor about it, didn't get anything for it, so she probably went to the drugstore and asked the pharmacist what she should take. Later, at home, when she couldn't sleep, she started taking them. When one or two didn't work, she kept on taking them, until finally, her son finds her awake early in the morning, exhibiting bizarre behavior. Even if the son had not produced the empty Benadryl bottle, you could have arrived at the diagnosis through the physical exam. There were multiple findings. Adding them all up would have been like putting pieces of a jigsaw puzzle together. Remember to do this when multiple physical findings are present. One of the most frequently encountered errors in the management of poisoning or overdose is omission of general treatment measures when the specific diagnosis is made. Except for iron and acid or alkali ingestions, activated charcoal should be given routinely, especially since several studies have advocated the use of activated charcoal alone in the treatment of acute toxic ingestions. A cathartic agent to hasten the elimination of the drug or poison is also indicated in most cases if the patient does not already have diarrhea. Establishing an IV and cardiac monitoring are critical actions if the examiner wants you to administer the antidote, physostigmine. Don't wait too long to get the IV started because the examiner may have your patient decompensate suddenly, making venous access difficult. Cardiac monitoring is also advisable for two reasons. 1. Anticholinergics have the potential to induce cardiac dysrhythmias. And 2. So does physostigmine. Be prepared since some of these dysrhythmias may be life-threatening and difficult to treat. There is considerable controversy regarding the use of physostigmine in the treatment of anticholinergic poisoning. While there is no question that physostigmine can rapidly and dramatically reverse an anticholinergic crisis, its action is unpredictable in the setting of a multi-drug overdose. Furthermore, because physostigmine induces increased levels of acetylcholine, it can actually precipitate a cholinergic crisis, which can cause, among other things, seizures, bradycardia, heart block, and asystole. However, physostigmine can be helpful in the management of some patients with pure anticholinergic overdose, specifically those with intractable seizures, coma, severe agitation, or symptomatic narrow complex SVT. It is also useful if anticholinergic toxicity is suspected but not known in a severely agitated or comatose patient. Normalization of mental status in these patients confirms the diagnosis and obviates the need for CT or lumbar puncture studies. The initial dose of physostigmine is 1 to 2 milligrams in the adult and 0.02 milligram in kids, but no more than 2 milligrams total. It should be infused slowly over 5 minutes since rapid IV administration may induce seizures. Two other cautionary warnings should be noted. Physostigmine should not be used in patients with any conduction abnormality on ECG, nor should it be given to patients with a cyclic antidepressant overdose, since asystole has been reported with its use in these patients. In reference to this exam, I would recommend the following. If you are presented with a case of anticholinergic poisoning, refrain from using physostigmine if the patient's clinical condition is not compromised by severe hypertension, dysrhythmias, delirium, coma, or seizures, or if he doesn't show signs of increasing toxicity. However, if the examiner presents you with a compromised patient or one in which signs and symptoms are continually appearing or worsening, administer the drug in a low dose and explain the controversial nature of the drug. This tells the examiner that you know the correct antidote and that you are also aware of the potential adverse consequences. I believe he will accept that. In this particular case, the patient's agitation was adequately and appropriately managed with an IV benzodiazepine. Physostigmine was not indicated. The benzodiazepines are the drugs of choice for the treatment of agitation in these patients. Avoid the phenothiazines and the butyrophenones. These agents have anticholinergic properties. They can also lower the seizure threshold and induce hypotension. In closing the analysis of this case, I have one additional tip. Don't try to outguess or outplay the examiner by trying to figure out what he's up to. You are likely to make a mistake if you use this ploy. One of my favorite lines is about the tennis pro, Chris Everett. When asked if she tried to anticipate the fancy serves and intricate maneuvers of her opponent, Miss Everett said, "I just concentrate on returning the ball to the other side of the court." I think that's good advice. This is the end of the fourth case study.